Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of Four Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic novel show. If it's in pictures, in sequential art form, with speech bubbles, we're going to talk about it.
Yes, we're here today, obviously, with Rob and hello. Myself, Ben.
I don't know why, but suddenly I'm doing posh hellos. Hello.
Yeah, that is strange, but you are a bit of a weird one.
Yes, yes. The weirdness abounds today. I've been up for a long time today.
Fair dues. So we've got some news today, don't we?
Yes, we do. Starting off with Hawk Girl, I think we'll start off with. Actually, no, the biggest news. We'll come to Hawk Girl. The biggest news was Deadpool.
Yes. Recently, there was an April Fool's joke that came out that gave some good new news about the movie, really. The joke was they were doing an interview with Ryan Reynolds, who's going to be playing Deadpool, and they were doing it based like an interview, and they were saying like, oh, I remember Deadpool was at the end of Wolverine, and like, and they said we're staying away from Wolverine, that one of the big worries of a lot of fans.
The other one was the PG-13. Oh, yes, we're happy it's going to be a family-friendly movie. I think that's a good move.
Yeah, but they probably changed that by having Deadpool come behind the review interviewer and beating him to death with a light. So, and they confirmed it's going to be rated R.
Well, potentially R.
Yeah, that. Really, for a Deadpool movie, you kind of have to go to the higher end.
Yeah, I think 18 at least. I think if they put it as R, which is restricted, it'll be 18 over here.
Yeah. So like, I don't mind that. Like, we can... I'm 18 now, I can go see it. It's going to be a shame that for all the kids who like Deadpool, but they like Deadpool because of the way he is.
Yeah.
And if they make it any younger... not going to be quite Deadpool as he's meant to be.
Well, I mean, the game was 18, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
So, I can't really see the movie version of Deadpool being any lower than 18.
Well, that's what I want.
Yep, I think that's what everyone wants. Anyway, moving on to Hawk Girl. Right, remember in season 9 of Smallville, Hawk Girl appeared in that?
Yes.
Right, well, this isn't that Hawk Girl. This is a totally new continuity.
You remember that Hawk Girl? Forget her.
Yeah, forget her, forget her. This is based on the current Arrow Flash TV shows that are on. And they are bringing out a new Hawk Girl TV series, which is an unusual move.
Well, it's not that unusual. They've been doing great strides with Arrow and with the Flash. So
I know, but Arrow and Flash are kind of two of the more mainstream characters. Hawk Girl's well known, but she hasn't really had... does she have her own comic? I don't think she does.
I'm not sure, but she has been holding her own pretty strong in a lot of the comic series.
Yeah, in Justice League and stuff like that, she has been holding her own. And she is a strong character in her own right.
Yeah, there has been a big movement to push strong female characters. DC recently showing... what's going to be happening after Convergence, have shown the new costumes for a lot of their characters, sort of cutting down on the sex exploit stuff. So it makes sense they're trying to push more female-friendly agenda.
Yeah. I mean, the Broadway actress Chiara Rene, who made her Broadway debut with Big Fish and appeared on NBC's Law & Order Special Victims Unit, is going to be playing the role of Kendra Saunders, who is Hawk Girl. It's been reported that Saunders isn't expected to be one of the three new comic characters that are, you know, on television that this Arrow Flash spin-off has promised.
Yeah.
So this is going to be something else. The character for the new spin-off show is described as a young woman that starts to learn that she has been reincarnated over centuries. And when she is provoked, the ancient warrior persona within her manifests itself, which includes wings growing out of her back.
Fun times.
So kind of a cross between, you know, angel transformation and Hulk, I suppose.
Yeah, I was wondering which way they'd go, because there's different versions of Hawk Girl where she's got like attachable wings or yeah. when she has actual wings.
The weird thing is the reincarnation bit is kind of an ongoing thing with Hawk Girl.
Yeah.
With Hawkman and Hawk Girl. It's one of those old things that keeps coming back, and because they had the whole ancient Egypt bit with Hawk Girl and Hawkman.
Yeah. Actually, there was one of the comics that I was reading recently. I think it was... was it Second Earth or New Earth or something like that?
Oh, Earth 2.
Earth 2, Earth that's 2, the
that's
one.
It. Yeah, I remember.
And they were showing the how Hawk Girl got her wings and that, and it was through like searching an Egyptian tomb.
Yeah.
She was then blessed with the wings.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. Maybe it's a reference to that, we don't know.
So, either way, she's a bit of an underdeveloped character in a lot of the comics, but she's always been a fan favorite, so it's going to be interesting. Yeah. She's always been more interesting than Hawkman. He was always very single tone. I'm going to hit the thing with the mace, and that is all.
He's basically like Batman with wings.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I get from him, with Batman with abs and wings. You know, he's just all about intensity. He's like, oh, so I'm going to hit them with my giant mace.
Yeah, so, she has a bit more decor to her.
She's got a bit more... thing is, it's because she's part of the Justice League. She has a lot more depth to her because of her relationship with the other characters in the Justice League.
Yeah.
I mean,
Hawkman's in the Justice League as well.
Hawkman's kind of on and off with the Justice League. Hawkgirl is one of the...
she is very, like, intertwined with the rest of them while Hawkman does his own stuff.
What was it? John Stewart? Was it the Green Lantern?
Oh, yeah.
She actually has kind of a relationship with him.
Yeah.
At one point. And then there's this kind of on-again, off-again thing because he ends up with somebody else, that woman who has, like, all the animal spirit powers. And then, you know, there's that kind of ongoing thing. You know, are they going to get back together or are they not?
Ross and Rachel.
Some weird soap opera love triangle going on there.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Yes, Star Trek.
Yes, everyone's favorite Star Trek.
And Green Lantern. Nice segue from...
not everyone's favorite superhero.
Yes. It's not a crossover that you'd normally expect.
Yes. So it's been announced that they're going to be crossing over in a comic series. And, well, it's a bit of an odd choice.
Yes, Star Trek, Green Lantern, The Spectrum War. Which sounds more like something from the about 1980s computing.
Spectrum seems to be the name of the game recently. A lot of people have been dropping it in subtitles and stuff.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
I was thinking, is that New Bond? But that's
Spectre.
Spectre, yeah.
It's close enough. It's easy to mistake. I mean, when I think about Spectrum, I'm thinking, number one, I'm thinking ZX Spectrum. Number two, Mask, because his helmet, was called Spectrum.
Yeah.
And number three, you know, just a rainbow. I'm not
fair dues.
You know. The Spectrum War is a six-part monthly miniseries which will be written by veteran Star Trek comic writer Mike Johnson with interior art by Angel Hernandez, who's worked on Infinite Crisis, Fight for the Multiverse, Arrow. Star Trek Green Lantern The Spectrum War will be available at some point in July. It's going to boast covers from Gabriel Rodriguez, Francesco Francavilla, Elsa Charretier, and Gary Bowen.
Have they dropped any information about what the plot's going to be?
Something to do with colours. I think, you know, the Green Lantern...
That's because that's what everything that the Green Lanterns have anything to do with is always colour-based.
Yes, they've looked forward to, apparently, Greg Goldstein, IDW president and COO, has said, "We've looked forward to bringing these two iconic universes together for a long time. Star Trek and Green Lantern both share so many of the same science fiction adventure themes and ideals that a galaxy-spanning crossover like this is simply logical."
I wouldn't say logical.
Yeah, neither would I.
But I guess they're both in space. That's enough of connection for them.
Yes.
So, I told you the other week you were reading a Star Trek...
Planet of the Apes.
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I know. They get around, don't they?
Yeah.
Kirk sure gets around.
So, what did you think of that one again?
It was... It didn't quite mesh mainly because you had two alpha males fighting it out over which one was the actual alpha male.
Oh, and then this is going to be bad because basically everyone in Green Lantern is an alpha male fighting to be an alpha male, and now they're just adding an extra alpha male to be an alpha male.
Who doesn't have any Green Lantern powers, but has a giant starship instead.
Yep. Not compensating for anything.
Exactly.
You don't know. Comic book crossover laws probably say that someone on the crew is going to get a ring.
You do realize, if it's going to go in line with the other Star Trek crossovers, then Spock has to defeat a Green Lantern with a Vulcan neck pinch.
Oh, yeah.
My God, apparently he beat Wolverine with one.
How else are you going to beat Wolverine? Just common knowledge.
Yeah, so, yeah. I want it so that Spock, God bless Leonard Nimoy, but Spock has to defeat all of the major superheroes now with a Vulcan neck pinch. This has to happen.
Mordok.
Yes.
How are you going to neck pinch? He doesn't have a neck. He's just got a giant head.
No. He can do the mind meld thing and mess with the brain, can he?
I don't know, but that's not a neck pinch. I want...
Your thoughts to my thoughts.
I want Spock to do a pinch on someone who doesn't have a neck and somehow have it work.
I want to see Superman go up against Mordok. There's no neck to snap.
So then again, he's just like a giant flying head. He'll be weaved into the pavement.
Yeah, curb stomped.
So, tell the truth, I've never found that much interest in Green Lantern. The cartoon was pretty good, but other than that, I always found Hal Jordan to be a bit of a boring character.
Hal Jordan got interesting after his, during the whole Parallax thing.
Yeah.
You know, that was when he actually became a relatively interesting character. But aside from that, he's very, very vanilla. I always thought the better Green Lantern was Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
Because he was just basically, he was ginger and he had a bad temper and he thought he was everything. Yeah. He was always picking fights with people.
My main issue is none of them seem to have any imagination. Like, I can create anything in the world. So I'll make a hammer. Or a gun.
Yeah.
Or think of something interesting.
Well, Guy Gardner was one of those kind of... He was basically DC's loose cannon.
Yeah.
You know, he was the one... He basically quit being a Green Lantern... And took on and basically found a yellow ring and became like an enemy of Green Lanterns.
Yeah.
And the way that it used to be that the way to power the yellow ring was to fight Green Lanterns, which is why Sinestro was always picking fights with Green Lanterns, was basically to power his yellow ring.
that's not a sustainable power source, mate.
It's not a sustainable power source. But then after that, he was really popular, but then, as a character, people liked him. As a character, because he was just a complete and utter, douche.
Yeah.
He was. He hated everybody. He was bad-tempered with everybody. And then they decided to mellow him out during the Zero Hour stuff by making him like Superman. He's the last son of a dead world.
Yeah.
He's an alien called Warrior, and he can produce any kind of weapon from his body. And you just ruined his character.
Don't you? I can see that being a cool character, but don't take someone who's already a cool character and change it into a different character.
That's exactly what they did, with him. And it sucked. I'm sorry. They killed that character totally.
Yeah.
And Guy Gardner, before then, was interesting. He got angry at the most irrelevant things. He had a chip on his shoulder about not being Earth's number one Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Because that was Hal Jordan.
Yep. He managed to bore his way to the top.
Yep. Anyway, enough of that. Moving on to Secret Wars.
Yes.
Yes. Alex Alonso, the Marvel's editor-in-chief, has said that the company is building an entire new world for the X-Men. After Secret Wars, and it's going to be a shared universe within the X books.
Yes.
Yeah. It's obviously Marvel Secret Wars, everybody pretty much knows about it. There's loads of different lines ending. I think we went through all the ones that are ending.
Yeah, I think we went through most of them. Was all of them.
So, yes, it's they're not segregating the X-Men into their own universe. The X-Men are going to be an integral part of the Marvel universe that's going to continue.
Yeah.
What they're doing is...
They're ending uncanny, though, aren't they?
They're ending uncanny, yeah. Which is a weird one. I think they'll end it and restart it.
Yeah, that's you know, my guess. Because there was a lot of big titles up there, like Thor and
well, I mean,
that sort of stuff, where they're not going to stay dead. They're probably just rebooting them.
Well, I mean, I think the reason why they're doing it that way is because, I mean, it's like The Amazing Spider-Man was one of the ones that they were ending. The Uncanny X-Men. These are iconic titles in themselves. They're the ones that's kind of kick-started all of these books. The Amazing Spider-Man was the original Spider-Man, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then The Uncanny X-Men was the original X-Men.
I thought it was the X-Men, then the Uncanny. Because I can remember the launch of Uncanny.
I don't know. We'll check on that. But I've always known them as the Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah.
So we will check on that. But yeah. Anyway, according to Alonso, the X-Men play a big role in Secret Wars, and those mutants that survive the event will be crucial building blocks for the Marvel Universe moving forward. Alonso went on to say that he wasn't attempting to tease anything or create ambiguity with his statement. His statement was a Twitter statement which says, "Relax, folks. Everything ends with hashtag Secret Wars, but the hashtag X-Men will remain an integral part of the Marvel Universe."
Well, they're gonna have to. It's X-Men.
Yeah, I mean they're two bigger kind of fighting force, I suppose you call them, within the Marvel universe.
So there'll be an outcry if they were gone.
Yeah,
I mean, no one batted an eyelid when Fantastic Four went down because it's Fantastic Four, but they take out someone like Spider-Man or the Avengers or the X-Men. They're their heavy hitters. They're not going anywhere.
Do you know what disappointed me about the Fantastic Four? Was the lack, just the unrealized potential with it.
Yeah.
You had, basically, a family of superheroes. You know, they had that family dynamic going for them, and that's something that you don't see in modern comic books.
Yeah.
You know, they could have really explored that. They tried exploring it a few times during the 80s and 90s, and, you know, people didn't react well to it, but it's ripe for revisiting as kind of a family thing.
Yeah.
You know? Reed and Sue having a kid, Franklin, you know, the pressures of being a parent, being a parent and being a superhero at the same time.
Yeah.
That's something that nobody really looks into. But I can see there being a market for it. It might not be a mainstream title, but...
Wasn't there, I remember in one of the latest Avengers,
Avengers World.
Avengers World, that's
yes.
It. There was a huge storyline about Cannonball and... Smasher having a child together.
Yes, and I like the way they handled that. I really like the way they handled that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think comic books needs to have a think about what they do with the Fantastic Four as a title.
Well, it's ended.
No, I mean, if they think about bringing it back in the future, I think they need to really think about it.
Trying to bring it back as a movie, aren't they? So
yeah, depending on the popularity of the movie. And they all look too young in that trailer. Seriously, you know. I keep thinking, like, their parents are going to turn up and, you know, tell them off.
Okay, Johnny, time to come back in. You can play with your friends tomorrow.
Yeah, 5 more minutes.
Please, Mom, it's still light out. You know the rules. 7 is 7. You have to come back in.
Anyway, moving on. Scott Lobdell and Aspen MLT, they're launching a new series on April the 8th called The 4 Points. Now, it's a magic mystery story that features a woman who was once the black sheep of her family, but ends up inheriting the family empire with all its problems.
Okay.
Scott Lobdell, as most people will know, is the writer for Teen Titans. And this looks like a completely new original series with original kind of heroes in it.
Yeah.
I don't think there might be some crossover with existing franchises later on, but I think it's a new IP, completely new IP. It sounds pretty interesting. It goes, throughout history, oddities have remained hidden away within the fabric of societies across the planet. However, in recent years, these unexplained phenomena have begun to emerge with a vengeance. Enter Gia Sorrentino, They thought she was crazy. Oh, God. They thought she was crazy. It sounds like one of those awful movie lines, you know, from trailers.
She thought she was crazy, but she was the only one that was right.
Yeah, basically. They thought she was crazy and locked her away from the rest of the world. Yet, following a family tragedy, she has inherited an empire, and with it, the keys to unlocking some of the most unimaginable secrets of mankind. Together with three other women who possess abilities of inhuman nature, Sorrentino embarks on a journey to discover the full potential of their collective powers. But along with the amazing comes the sinister, and some things that should have remained hidden, including those that can threaten not only their existence but the rest of the world as well.
One thing that does worry me a little bit, main character sounds a bit Raven-ish.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to be retreading already tread ground, because obviously writing Teen Titans, he knows how to write Raven.
Yeah.
And I just hope he's not doing the same thing again.
Yeah, I can see why that would be a big concern.
But I'm interested.
Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Anyway, last news story of the day, and this one involves kaiju and giant robots.
Yep.
Pacific Rim, Tales from the Drift. It's a four-part comic miniseries which follows on after Pacific Rim, Tales from Year Zero, the graphic novel.
Yeah.
Which in turn, I think, followed on from the movie. So, yeah. It's Legendary
Cavern. I thought it was a prequel to the movie.
Was it a prequel?
Because in the movie, they close the breach.
So yes. Sorry. It's a prequel to the movie.
The kaiju was still there.
Yeah, because it's Year Zero, because it deals with, yes. It's a prequel to the movie, and this follows on after. So this is kind of in between.
Yeah.
Anyway, film company Legendary announced last week that a new Pacific Rim comic is in the works. It is called Tales from the Drift, and it's going to feature a story by original film screenwriter Travis Beecham and writer Joshua Fialkov. Artist Marcos Martz and colorist Marcello Maiolo will illustrate the four-issue monthly series.
So, should be good. As everyone knows, Pacific Rim was a huge hit. Giant robots fighting giant monsters, what's not to love? So, based on its time set, this might be like the heyday of Gypsy Danger and a lot of the...
He hits the kaiju with an oil tanker.
Yep.
I just suddenly turned five at that point.
So, from the time setting, a lot of the major machines in the movie, this will be when they're at their peak. So it could be a really good saying.
Yep.
So one thing is, though, I know how it's going to end.
Yeah.
Because I've seen the movie, and if this is all before the movie, I know that everyone fails on the way. Like, they're going to be fighting, and then eventually someone's going to bring up, hey, let's build a wall instead of fighting.
Yeah. Just remember, you know, there is a sword, so use it.
Yeah, remember the sword. The sword would be really helpful, like, 10 minutes earlier.
Yes. And you wouldn't have needed to hit the kaiju with an oil tanker.
Exactly.
Anyway.
One more thing before we finish the news. Convergence has begun.
Oh, yes.
If you don't know, Convergence is the big world meeting in the DC Universe. The plot of it is Brainiac is doing his old world-snatching thing, and he's taking up cities and planets from different timelines and dimensions and putting them all together to see what happens. And yeah, it started, so going to be seeing a lot of interesting things coming out.
Yes. It's strange. I think DC and Marvel are both... To think that DC and Marvel are both having kind of a clear-out at the same time.
Yeah, the difference is DC aren't saying it's a clear-out.
Mm.
They're calling it an event, and I think some series are going to be ending afterwards, but I think it's just a thing that's going to be happening.
Do you know what Convergence, the whole Convergence event, you know, each kind of reality, each alternate universe is basically fighting for its own existence.
Yeah.
It reminds me, seriously, solidly reminds me about this sci-fi horror manga anime series called Bokurano.
Yeah.
Right, which is basically... A group of aliens have basically, they become so powerful, they're like gods, and they have basically decided that it's a game of survival of the fittest. If there are two realities that are very, very close to each other, because there's only enough energy to go around, there's only so much energy to go around, yeah. and everything is made up of energy. So in order to conserve that energy and prevent, you know, the dissipation of energy in the future, they basically set this rule so realities that are very, very similar to each other with kind of only marginal differences, they basically have to fight each other to survive. And the way they do it is they choose a team of people
yeah.
to pilot a giant robot, and then a giant robot from a different reality fights. And the reason why Bakurano is a horror series is because this time the pilots are all children, and the robot functions by using the life force of the pilot. So basically these children become sacrificial lambs in a game of survival, of ultimate survival.
Yeah.
It covers a whole range of stuff, and I'm hoping Convergence does kind of the same thing, because there was one brilliant scene in Bakurano where a robot that had fought repeatedly and won repeatedly from a different reality basically just said, we don't want to do this anymore, rips out its core and basically gives it holds it out there and crushes all the pilots, wiping that reality from existence.
So I think the Marvel one
yeah.
is closer to that, because in that one a second planet Earth's coming from a different dimension, they're gonna collide,
yeah,
so one has to wipe out the other.
Yeah.
So that sounds a bit more, this is basically just different worlds pitted against each other, but it's not to, like, death or anything.
Ah, that's a shame. Sorry. Yeah, it's not a shame. I don't want to see...
Why don't you kill Batman?
Yes.
Punch Robin in the face and kill him. Oh, I need
Robin's died enough times. I mean, the Joker's killed him enough times.
I know, but he always comes back.
And it's an ongoing thing with the Joker, isn't it, about Robin? He's like, I'm going to kill him, and this time he's going to stay dead.
Yep, good luck next time.
Anyway, yes, that was the news.
We'll be back in a minute with our reviews of the week.
Yes.
I wish I listened to Keyframe, the Geek Show podcast network show about anime and cartoons. They don't know how long this episode takes. Is this a filler for a season? Welcome back to 4Panel. We are now on the reviews, and we're starting off with you, Rob.
Yes, and I'm going to start off with Loki, Agent of Asgard. Now, I didn't even know he was an Agent of Asgard, but apparently Loki is an Agent of Asgard.
Well, he's from Asgard and he's an agent.
Thing is, it's got a very, very odd picture on the front. It's got a giant Loki sitting on a mountain of bones and skulls, or a pile of bones and skulls, eating what looks to be a younger version of himself.
As you do. It's Easter.
Yes. Anyway, the very first page says, this is the story of Loki. Loki died, Loki was born again. The second Loki was younger and better, but this kid Loki took advice from an echo of his old wicked self, who ended up killing his soul and stealing his body. Yeah, it gets weirder from there. Because this is like a Star Trek intro type thing.
Yeah.
First page is just wall of text. And then it goes on to kind of typical comic book artwork, but then it shows, then it kind of goes then and now and jumps around in time.
Yeah.
Showing Loki as a kid and then Loki as an adult. And it's got Thor with one eye, and Loki sitting on a throne of bones on what's left of Midgard, or Earth.
Yeah.
And Thor doesn't know how Loki's managed to achieve it. He doesn't understand how Loki has managed to destroy Midgard while Thor, you know, was looking. It wasn't that Thor wasn't looking, because Thor has always been very protective of Midgard. But how did Loki manage to destroy the place that Thor loves second most after Asgard? He doesn't know. So Thor's in a rage. He's trying to hit Loki, but Loki is the master of tricks and is easily avoiding everything Thor does. And eventually raises the dead.
As you were to
skeleton
do.
Skeleton warriors of some of Thor's old allies and friends.
Ooh, always a dick move.
Yeah.
Bringing back the dead friends.
Yeah. And anyway, Loki eventually explains to Thor how he's managed to achieve certain things, doesn't tell him the whole truth. There's deals with Mephisto and various other things going on. And Loki makes Thor realize that there's nothing Thor can do. he's completely helpless.
Yeah.
And Thor swears revenge on Loki no matter how long it takes. Just one panel, thousands of years later, with Thor sitting on the throne of Asgard, you know, saying the end of time. He will hunt Loki down till the end of time. And then it cuts to Loki's younger self being tortured by his older self. This gets very metaphysical, you know, and shown that his whole life, Loki's whole existence is just one big lie, and he shouldn't believe anybody but himself.
Fun.
Yes. King Loki wins. That's the last line. Anyway, yeah, it's an interesting read. I've got to say, I like the take on Loki. I've always liked Loki as a character. You know?
Well, he's been huge recently because of the movies.
Yeah, I've always liked him as a character of old, though. He's always seemed more of the... See, Loki's anger, originally, it made more sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
It made far more sense. He wasn't a true son of Odin, for a start. But also, he was cast into this whole role of being... This actually focuses on the fact that no matter what Loki does, no matter how good he is, no matter how helpful he is, and no matter how many times he protects Asgard, Midgard, everything, he will forever be just one thing, the god of mischief and lies, and that is how people will see him.
Yeah.
And that is where his rage stems from. He cannot be anything else because he's been typecast into that.
Okay, next up, I'm going to be talking about Thanos versus Hulk, number four. Bit of a misleading title, because you don't actually fight Thanos in this. He's fighting Annihilus.
So where's Thanos then?
He appears in one panel at the end.
What?
Yeah, so I'm guessing it's a bit of you must defeat my lieutenants before you can defeat me.
Yes.
Sort of thing. So basically, Hulk is on a different planet, currently fighting Annihilus. During this time, a troll is trying to get back Hulk and get him back to Earth. But Annihilus and Hulk are absolutely going at it. It's the Hulk sort of shut off from Banner at all. Like, you know how sometimes Banner's in control of it and he sort of knows what he's doing? Yeah, this is Hulk, pure hulking out. With some hilarious lines. Like, you cannot feel its icy embrace. No, you think hugs will hurt Hulk? I was like, no, I was talking about fear, you idiot. Oh, I said, it's always fun to see Hulk just reacting very bluntly to things. I said, it's a good fight because it actually has Hulk on the back heel. There's a point where he is literally running in fear from Annihilus. He sort of has this fear aura thing he does.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
And by having the troll watching on from the fight, it sort of gives you a bit of an input into thought process, because the troll is like there sort of narrating it when no one could be. So it's a fun fight. It's very action-packed, but it is just the fight. It ends with the Hulk not winning, getting a good punch off, but then being teleported back to Earth. But it's an interesting series. It's only just started. It's only on issue 4, so go check it out.
Fantastic. And so I'm going to move on with Hulk this time. And ironically, if you hold up that cover for a second, Ben, right, you've got that Hulk fighting Annihilus and looks like he's being grabbed. Now, if you look at this cover...
Yeah, it's sort of a similar sort of theming of...
Yeah.
But it's the Hulk...
Being grabbed by a big green guy.
No, that's Deadpool being grabbed by a big green guy.
Yeah. Deadpool is on the cover of this Hulk. This is Hulk number 13.
This is the vanilla Hulk, not Thanos versus.
Actually, this isn't too bad in terms of... we'll get into that in a second. It says on the cover, Deadpool just going, this is no way to treat a guest star, because Hulk's got him by the skull.
As you do.
Anyway.
That's how I treat my guests.
In this, it appears that Banner and the Hulk have been separated. And you now have a new super intelligent Hulk called Doc Green. Seriously, that's what they call him. And he's sporting a mohawk and a beard and mustache. He looks a bit like a pirate, or the green one. Anyway, he is working on a serum to cure the radiation mutations, but he created an artificial intelligence that has gone wild. And basically, he, in his quest to cure all the gamma mutates, his AI has basically taken over and evolved and evolved and is now out to kind of stop Hulk at the same time. While Hulk is on his way to try and stop Red Hulk, which is Thunderbolt Ross. And along the way, Hulk has hired Deadpool to keep an eye on Thunderbolt Ross. Deadpool is not being an assassin or merc or anything like that. He's basically a scout. He's scouting out Thunderbolt's location and relaying it back to Hulk, while Hulk is continuing to work on cures. Hulk tests one of his... finds the leader and the Abomination and believes he's cured the leader and the Abomination, but Hulk's AI has already been in touch with the leader and has advised him on how to prevent the cure from working. And it ends with Hulk and Red Hulk about to get on with it. That's the last panel. They're about to get it on.
Let's get it on.
Yes, they're about to throw down and basically break the desert.
Is it's always fun getting two like powerhouses.
Yeah, it's always good when you have like a superhero fist fight. But I'm actually very curious about this Hulk, right?
Yeah,
because I read the Hulk a lot during the 90s and 80s and the early 2000s. And it kind of, they had this whole melding of Banner and Hulk, so he was super intelligent and Hulk at the same time, if that makes sense. This time they basically split them off from each other, so they're actually two separate characters. Now, they were one, but they're actually two. And I'm curious as to how this is going to play out. I am very curious, because it doesn't feel like Hulk.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like Hulk because of the intelligence of Hulk.
Because part of it was the indiscriminate destruction, really.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it because of his intelligence. But in certain scenes, it reminds me of the old 90s Hulk. You know, the old 90s, early 2000s Hulk. And, you know, where he's got that intelligence so he can crack jokes and stuff like that. And, you know, actually have a sense of humor instead of the sense of humor kind of being charming and unintentional, as in the Lego game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, Hulk don't like walls. Walls keep people apart.
Oh, that's adorable.
Exactly, you know. So, yeah, I am curious as to how this is going to play out. But I think they've overcomplicated it a little bit.
Comics tend to sometimes. But they overcomplicate things so they can take it in a different direction.
Yeah.
And I sort of applaud that more because, for instance, it was overcomplicated when in Spider-Man Doc Ock took over the mind of Peter Parker.
Yeah, don't get me started on that.
But that is still one of the best arcs about.
Yeah, it's the whole Aunt May thing that that really worried me about that one.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. So,
because didn't Doc Ock want to have a thing for Aunt May?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, Doc Ock had a thing for Aunt May.
So, I'm just saying, doing unusual things, taking stuff in new direction, is better than rehashing the old things over and over again.
Yeah. I'll agree with you on that. It just feels like this is only issue 13. It feels like they've overcomplicated it really quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you want to introduce, if this is a key plot point, you want to introduce it sort of early-ish.
Yeah. Well, I'll see how it plays out. I'll see if I can pick up some of the earlier issues and have a look over.
Yeah. Okay, next up, I'm going to be talking about Deadpool number 44. This is continuing on from the one that I reviewed the other week.
Yeah.
And this one actually has the confrontation with Omega Red.
Yes.
And know how last time I said how I felt he'd grown as a character, he'd changed.
Yeah.
This one really shows it because he talks things through.
Ooh. That's an unusual move for Deadpool.
Yeah, he doesn't go for the whole hack and slash because basically it's
two guys with unbelievable healing factors that won't die. So he basically sits down and goes, hey, I know what it's like to be you. And at the moment, you're where I was when I was being used by people, and I was angry and scared, and I understand what it's like. But if you take a second and look, I'm not the enemy.
Yeah.
And he actually talks things through and convinces Red to back down.
Really?
Yeah.
He negotiates?
He negotiates successfully. That is till Chikala comes in and punches her hand through Red's chest.
Ouch.
Yep. If you don't know, she is sort of a underworld demon lord person and Deadpool's wife. He contacted her because in the last issue found these weird smoky coffins that the people were basically stealing and trying to take. And it's sort of her domain, so he brought her in to try and find out what was going on. And eventually he managed to calm that down as well. She stops killing Red and allows him to leave, and he goes off on his own. He goes to think out his life and become a better person. Like I said, Deadpool's grown as a character. He's not the single note person he was. So ends up under these coffins, like not in the coffins. The coffins are empty. They're basically ceremonial.
Yeah.
But under them are buried undead warriors that she sneakily gets charge of after Deadpool's left. So Deadpool's heading home, but well, the bad guys have sort of found his family. So find out what happens next.
Yes. Ooh, interesting. It's I've just had this weird thought. I think we have to put this out to all the Deadpool fans on Facebook. What is Omega Red going to do next?
Yeah.
Is he going to open a candy store? Is he going to take on the role of Santa? What will Omega Red be, do next as a job after rethinking his life?
I would like to see reformed Omega Red face to face with Wolverine and see what happens.
Oh, can you imagine him? He'd make an amazing Tarzan. Swinging through the trees.
Anyway, what have you got next, Rob?
Yes, I've got Batwoman. And, you know, I haven't read Batwoman for a long, long time. In fact,
which,
I haven't read...
Which version is it? Is it the creepy one that has the mouth sewn shut and stuff, or...?
This is the creepy one where she's got, like, her sister who is, like, the kind of the Joker and not.
Okay.
It's weird. Her sister reminds me of the Joker. Not so much in the way of the face paint, but in just the attitude and the temperament.
Yeah.
Batwoman, everyone seems to have white faces for some reason. And I mean, you know, white as in powdered, as in, you know, heavy makeup type faces. And, yeah. Anyway, there is a vampire in this, and Batwoman is in a relationship with this female vampire who's basically all but hypnotized her. They're up against Morgana Le Fay, who is this demon who is trying to attack the city, stuff like that. Batwoman has recruited various people to try and help her stop this, but Batwoman is also worried that she may be a killer. She may have actually killed somebody. Until her sister steps in and convinces her that hypnosis cannot make you do something that you wouldn't normally do, right? And that's when Batwoman kind of goes, okay, right, okay, now I see the truth, and breaks out from the vampire's mind control and leaves her to her sister, who then beats seven kinds of snot out the vampire.
Fun.
Yeah, you don't get to see that, though. But anyway, Morgan Le Fay is basically trying to take over the world and remake the world into an image. And the characters that are helping Batwoman, Etrigan the Demon, various others, they locate where she is because she's already started on her mission to take over the world. She's basically got a massive head start on them, and she's going to use satellite signals to fire this sorcery type thing and make all the world hers.
It seems a thing. Like, I'm going to be talking about it on the next thing I'm covering. But DC seem to like the sort of satellite mind control.
Yes. Anyway, it ends with Etrigan, Clayface, and some patchwork guy, Batwoman's sister and Batwoman, about to board the space shuttle.
Okay.
To try and stop this whole thing going on. I'm really confused. As I said, I haven't read Batwoman for a long time, and this one is a bit confusing for me.
Yeah.
I think this one might have been one that you might have covered better, Ben, because I'm stepping in, and the last time I read anything related to Batwoman was during the late 90s.
Yeah.
So we're talking like over 15 years, I've had no contact with the character.
Yeah. I've sort of become the dedicated Bat guy of the podcast, haven't I? I seem to be
Bat guy, yes. You are Bat guy.
Every time there's a Batman or Batman related thing, I'm reviewing it.
It's Bat guy and Rob. Yes, anyway. I think this one would have been better off with you covering it. I like the story. I like the things that they're doing in there. But I think in my case, it's coming in with too little knowledge, and that's the wrong part of the story.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, this is why we just mentioned about Hulk. Important plot points and stuff sort of get put at the forefront of the comic. So if you're coming in late, you're very late.
Yeah, well, this is issue 40, so I'm coming in very late. Thing is, it has aroused my curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't really read a Bat character like this before.
Yeah.
You know, there's a slight madness to it, which reminds me of things like Arkham Asylum and The Killing Joke, which, you know, makes me interested in the character.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to be getting all of the others, the other 39 issues, don't worry. Because I am interested in how this character developed into this. And I do want to know more about her sister. Is she actually kind of a representation of the Joker or not? I don't know. But if she is, that would be a really interesting dynamic to have within a family.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. You know. Anyway, moving on to you.
Yeah, talking of deadly satellite things... Futures End, issue number 47.
Oh, this is following on from the other Futures End that you covered, wasn't it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, no, I'm confused.
Yes, you are. I said, in this, Eye Has Awoken. It was a satellite system made to help mankind, but its sort of way of doing that has sort of become, turned them all into cybernetic zombies. But, Bruce Wayne and Tim Drake have plans on, and the whole crew have plans on how they can go back in time and fix this before any of the problems start. But obviously, Bruce and Tim do not see eye to eye. Bruce wants to do everything by himself. He wants to be sent back himself to stop it. Tim thinks he should be the one that goes back to save the Earth. But everything sort of changes when Firestorm comes back into the equation, because at the current time Tim has nothing to lose, but now that Firestorm's back, well, he's got the love of his life back. How can you just turn your back on that?
Okay.
But they're making preparations for the time travel when the cybernetic zombies sort of get to them, and they find out just a bit, like very close to when they have to launch, that the DNA code of Bruce isn't close enough to be able to send him to the place. So it has to be Tim Drake. So Tim Drake is sent to the Eye to shut it down. This is before the AI's gone crazy, before it's started making the cybernetical zombies, so it's quite welcoming, it's quite kind, until Tim starts laying down explosives, and then it starts fighting back. But Tim reasons with it while trying to plant his bombs. It calls onto like the explosives and shuts them down, but it then goes, oh no, you're right, yeah, that's worse for mankind, so I'm gonna kill myself, I'm gonna blow up. But I can send you back because I'm designed to help people, so I'm going to help save you, so I'm sending you back in time. So it ends with it sending Tim Drake back in time, or forward in time, to a new place. But where? The timeline's been changed, so what's happening, what's going on, we don't know.
Hmm. Very odd. Very, very odd. They like to play around with time a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's an interesting factor you can mess with.
But sometimes when they do it, they fail to keep it on kind of keep it on a level, and they kind of mess up their own continuity.
Yeah, well, that's why I think Convergence is going to be interesting, because there's a lot of conflicting futures, and what if someone's being brought into a time where the future that they are trying to prevent isn't happening?
Cool. Okay, right. Moving on to Spread.
Yes.
And this is issue 6, and it's a fairly new series by Justin Jordan, and the artwork's done by Carl Strahm, coloring, I think, by Philippe Sobrero. This is from Image Comics, and I got to say, I have already bought the first 5.
Okay, you liked it that much. Yeah, there's a lot of claims to buy stuff, but when you actually, before we've even done the show, I felt the need to buy stuff, you know something's good.
Right, Spread. Let's put it this way. I'm going to open this and show Ben just the very first panel.
Okay.
The very first panel is a giant maw with lots of teeth and various tentacles. And two guys having a sword fight, or what's the end of a sword fight. Anyway, this giant maw belongs to this giant worm-type creature, and there are others. These creatures are the Spread. They are basically a parasitical type, zombie type thing. They are an absolute anathema to pretty much all living existences. It's kind of a cross between anime meets zombie virus meets, you know, lone wolf and cub. This, and I mean, everyone is after this little kid, right? This baby who is on the back cover being held in one of those baby holders by a guy, a slightly oriental-looking guy, who reminds me of Ogami Ito from Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah, I can see that.
Anyway, the guy is holding a hatchet, and anyway, the story is basically the guy is teamed up with a couple of other people, and he's trying to protect the baby from various characters who are, some of them are infected, some of them are not, and all of them want the baby. And in the middle is this fight with this blonde swordsman who thinks he's God's gift to everything and wants the baby. He's being helped by two bald people, and they're being chased by a guy who ostensibly thinks he's a priest for these so-called new gods, the giant tentacle monsters. Anyway, everything kind of goes kablooey when a bunch of giant tentacle monsters suddenly appear in the middle of the fight.
Seen enough hentai to know where this is going.
Everyone's getting eaten, fingers are getting cut off, and there's lots of blood and gore all over the place.
That's exactly where I thought it was going.
Yes. The guy, the Ogami Ito like guy, he is heavily injured at the end, but something weird is going on with the Spread. And the Spread is somehow evolving. Because the last scene is basically an egg from the Spread sprouting a human hand.
Okay.
Something weird is going on. And then it goes into something very, very odd. That arc finishes, and then it cuts into a little extra comic called The Legacy of Luther Strode. It's a prequel to, sorry, the comic called The Legacy of Luther Strode. And it's about two characters called Luther and Petra. Petra has been arrested by the police, and Luther is in an armored van being held by a bunch of police. Luther looks like his entire body is covered in this kind of red blood mucus type thing. All sorts of weird stuff happens. The bridge that they're on starts swaying really badly, and then Luther escapes, rescues Petra. The two dive off the bridge into the water and escape.
Yeah.
Not sure what's going on there, but I am very, very curious, because the dynamic between Luther and Petra is actually quite interesting, and I like the idea that Luther doesn't want to be what he is. You know, it reminds me a bit of Ben Grimm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because Ben Grimm spent a long time not wanting to be the thing, but kind of being forced to be it because there was no way for him to change back. So, yeah. Anyway, spread, if you're a fan of The Walking Dead, right, or you're a fan of anything like The Goon or anything like that, then I think Spread is something that you're going to like.
Yeah.
And, you know, with it only being on issue 6 right now, you can pick it up really easily, really quickly. Right. Any more from you?
Yep. Last up from me. You know, there's always the big clashes between different types of people. The old one was pirates versus ninjas. It's been werewolves versus vampires. That's all old news now, because it's all about zombies versus robots now.
It's weird how this show's working out, that we're segueing actually into each other's comics.
Basically. So this is basically a zombie apocalypse where robots exist.
Yes.
And the robots are trying to help the people. So something nice they've done, it's split up into different sections following different groups of people. In this one, it has a group that have escaped a ship, and they've all landed in the middle of the ocean. They're on rafts to survive, but they sort of get on the bad side of some mermaids who believe they're attacking.
Okay.
And
where'd the mermaids come from?
I guess it's just a thing in this universe.
I can understand the zombies and the robots, but I don't get where the mermaids appeared from.
So they're all just trying to get to land when they're attacked by a giant kraken. But it literally just leaves it there. It's like, there's this panel I'm showing you.
Yes.
Where everyone's being attacked by zombies. Then it literally leaves their story and doesn't come back. So he might be covering it again in the next issue. I'm not sure yet. I haven't read it.
Way to leave you hanging.
I know. So they do that a lot with a lot of things in this comic. Next up, there's also a story about the one that probably makes up the bulk of the issue is about a little orphan who's just about with this robot trying to survive the zombie apocalypse. They're looking for upgrade materials for the robot when they find a robot they already fought that's been rebuilding itself via the scrap. So that's very interesting. But the best story in this, by far, is just for the art style and the presentation of it, is a story about Fritz Winterbottom. If you're not familiar with the series, he was the scientist who, near the start, who has managed to put his thought into the body of a robot and is now fighting back against the zombie scum to save the Earth. It's beautiful how it's drawn, and then just the fact that he's there like in the middle of a fire pronouncing, "But I'm Fritz Winterbottom." I'm like, yeah, I like you.
He sounds like he needs a mustache and a monocle.
Yeah, he should have. But he didn't. He was a bald man. A
robotic mustache.
He's class. I love him.
Fantastic.
And so, yeah, it's a very unique. It's got a variety of art styles going through. It's well drawn and it's interesting. Like I said, it does have quite like swift chapters about the different characters, and everything leaves you on a cliffhanger. But it's interesting, and it's only on issue 3, so go pick it up.
Fantastic. Right. Speaking of zombies versus robots, I have a zombie robot.
Yep.
This is Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier. Yep, about a segue.
He is the original zombie robot.
But the thing is, this has all gone very metaphysical. It's gone very, very weird. I was expecting the cover. I love the cover. I really love the cover of this. It's issue 6 of Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier. And it's just got his left hand holding up a peace sign, and then a bullet going through the two fingers that are upraised. It's such a good cover. But the actual story is very, very weird. It's on the planet Mer-Zed-Bor, Not sure where that is. I've never heard of this planet before. And you have some weirdness going on with someone called Crossbones, who apparently is going to destroy the universe. And there's some other guy there who has basically gone there to rescue Bucky, but also kind of save the universe and various things like that. He's talking with a woman called Ventolin, which I thought was a type of medication, but apparently isn't in this universe. It's someone's name. And he's recounting what happened in other universes where he fought Crossbones. And then the art style changes to a very kind of manga-esque, cartoony art style. And then it goes back after he's recounted his story to the more slightly realistic comic book art style.
It's a cool way to sort of do flashbacks and stuff.
Yeah, it is. It switches around in terms of the direction of story, but it does end with one thing that kind of ties it all together. Crossbones is in this universe. And he's basically singing really badly. And Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier, is basically trapped inside some kind of liquid prison field type thing. Not sure what's going on. Not sure if he's going to get out. Not sure why he's in there. This is one where I am going to have to read the previous five in order to understand what the hell is going on. Because really, if you're coming at it on issue six, you won't get it. If you haven't read the first five, I can pretty much guarantee you that. It's very confusing, this Winter Soldier. If you are going to read it, I would advise reading it from the first issue. And moving on to the final one. And I wish I could make this quick, but I'm going to try and make it quick. But it says on the cover, this is from DC, this is called Multiversity Ultra Comics. And it says on the cover, only you can save the world. If you value your lives, you must not read this comic. Anyway, DC Comics Multiversity, you must not read this comic. And it starts off with the main character called Ultra going, we made it, we're back, and explaining to you why you should stop reading this comic now. He looks like he's been heavily damaged, and he suddenly saw all sorts of tentacle things appear. And he says, don't turn the page, don't turn the page. And so you turn the page, and you start speaking. There's a guy behind the desk who's speaking to you and telling you that, oh, don't worry, we've done various things. You're taking part in an experiment. He goes on to say, not a hoax, not a dream, not an imaginary story, not an Elseworlds tale, referencing DC's Elseworlds. The idea behind this comic is that we are on Earth Prime here. Our reality, as we see it, is Earth Prime. And because of the physical laws, stuff like that, we cannot have real superheroes. So they use their technology to create an artificial superhero in the form of a comic book. This is actually his body, this comic book that I'm holding. And he is basically a collection of thousands and thousands of minds and thoughts and feelings, all of whom are reading his body. Apparently, I am reading Ultra's body at the moment. I am looking at Ultra in various poses. I'm not sure why that sounds wrong when I say it out loud, but yes, I'm reading Ultra's body. I'm seeing Ultra in various forms, and it's all about preventing these things called hits entering the universe. These are potentially evil creatures who will create nightmares and dominate worlds and various things like that. Ultra is... there's one very confusing piece of this. It says here, you know, activate Ultra Comics debut adventure, a nakedly allegorical tale, we just had a call. And I turn the page and it says, Batman Arkham Knight, because of an inconveniently placed advert.
It seems weird that the body of a superhero has adverts for other superheroes that don't exist within its universe.
Maybe it's one of those drunken tattoos. knowing some of the adverts that used to be in comic books, I can well believe that. Anyway, Ultra is basically... It gets very, very weird and very, 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 very quick. And it gets even weirder because they beat the big bad, who's basically this giant flying eyeball with bat wings. They beat him using internet trolling.
Isn't that how all justice is done nowadays?
Well, they don't actually inflict a killing blow on him. And Ultra somehow gets trapped inside a box with this thing, whatever it is. And that's where it ends. Apparently, Ultra is dead. I have an issue with this. It feels like it's trying to do what Deadpool did. You know, break the fourth wall.
Yeah.
But it's trying too hard to do it.
Yeah.
And I think by doing that, they've basically overcomplicated what was actually a really... It started out as a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
You know, right at the beginning, I was actually interested. I was thinking, okay, this actually looks quite interesting. This reads quite interesting. The way they're portraying it is actually really interesting. But then it just went off on one and into the wild blue yonder and didn't stop to think, okay, does this still make sense?
Yeah.
Now, you can get away with that if you're Deadpool, because we're used to that, but not now.
Deadpool sort of has its establishment. We all know what's going on.
Exactly.
Like, any new reader to it picks it up, and they've already heard what Deadpool's about, and they know what's going on.
Not just that. Even if you already know as well, Deadpool has a reason for his insanity.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell's going on in this, and a part of me actually doesn't care, if that makes sense.
Ah, that doesn't... bode well for the comic.
I did care at the beginning. That's the thing, but it did a great job in killing any kind of empathy I had for the comic. I think this is one of those experiments that DC has tried and failed.
Yeah, because they haven't really had that kooky, crazy, break the fourth wall sort of character yet, have they?
Yeah, and I think that's what they're looking for, and I think they've tried too hard to overcompensate with this. Unfortunately, sorry, DC, I can't be any fairer than that. Yep. Anyway,
quick thanks for sending us the comics from
comicdomain.co.uk.
Yes. Yeah, they've got a great system where if you go to their site, they'll bundle up all the weekly comics for you, send them straight to your house. Don't have to have any human interaction or leave your home.
Yes, you don't have to go to a comic book store ever again.
Yeah.
Be thankful.
So we have been 4Panel. Check us out on Facebook by looking up The Geek Show, or tweet us on Twitter at TGS_TheGeekShow.
Yes.
I have been Ben.
I have been Rob.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.